Hello, I'm Simon Burrs. Welcome to this week's Net Hero podcast. A little later, you'll hear an interview done by Kieran Burrs. Yes, keeping it in the family this week. It's my son, who's done a really important interview with a guy called Ricky Sandu, which is all about what are called eVTOL. Sounds crazy. Sounds like an experiment. But they're like vertical takeoff, little air taxis for one or two people. They look like drones, and how they might revolutionize your transport, your urban transport. So we'll catch up with that in a minute, but let me just look at what's been happening the last few days. So first of all, thank you very much for those of you who are registering for our Big Zero show. Yes, you'll have seen the social media. Hopefully you'll have seen the kerfuffle, the noise we're making around it. The reason we're making that noise is we really want you to be there. If you're listening to this podcast, you're interested in net zero. If you're interested in net zero, come to the CBS Arena in Coventry on June the 21st. It is free. That's right. It's free. So if you just go to bigzeroshow.com and register. And if you'd like to be a sponsor there, show off your solutions, then again, just go to that address and put your details in there. We'll be announcing some great speakers. I can already say there are a couple that I'll be announcing next week. Fantastic stuff. And we'll be looking at providing you, as I said, solutions for today to get you started on your net zero pathway. Now, you can't have missed the news, as I said, from the last couple of months, really, but last week or so, that the energy price cap has been now set at £700, near enough increase. We've had stories about another supplier going down, but we've also had sort of positive news around kind of investment and where things are going. So where am I with all of this? I just think that we have to accept that we are in a transition, and a transition will cost us. I think there's been a lot of policy mistakes which have led to the chaos we've got now. But part of it is it's unavoidable because the world is moving. And as you move away from coal, then right now we're using gas as a bridging fuel. And gas is basically in the hands of very few people because we have chosen to start to cut back on our own gas supplies. And so we haven't got the backup of nuclear. And so we are at the behest of gas prices. And LNG tankers will go wherever the price is best. And you're competing on a global market. And then you've got Putin, obviously, who's got some good gas taps that he can turn on and off at his whim. So we are in a matrix of political plus financial issues that cause this spike in energy prices. I do think things will get better, but not for the short term. And we have to accept as a society that this is the price. Some would say it's folly, you know, that we are 2% of global emissions and we really shouldn't be doing this if no one else is. But look, someone's going to make a stand. This country has been very brave to set the first net zero target back in 2019. And I think it's the right thing to do. It's just we are going to go through a bit of pain on that front. On the positive, if you've just seen the news, then you'll notice that the National Grid has said there's enough power from Dogger Bank, the wind farm, for it to be part of the solution for balancing the grid. So this is the transition. This is the transition where we move away from coal. I do believe, this is my personal view, that we should have lots more nuclear to give us baseload, but we've got wind, we've got some solar. We had a lot of wind with the recent storms, so our carbon consumption went down. So it's tough, it is tough. It's tough for businesses, it's tough for people. My gas bill's gone up, my electricity bill, I'm sure yours has. And it's not easy. And for some people who are suffering, it's really difficult. But saying that, this is what we have to do as a society. I think the problem is it's been exacerbated by political decisions. Hold fire, keep believing, because it's the right thing to do. I just think there's a bit of pain for us to go through. And talking about kind of doing the right things, it's a really interesting story that you'll see we published on Monday about greenfield homes being built clean. So they're being built with all these kind of, you know, heat pumps, etc., etc. And yet they're still built in farmland, ex-farmland. So you need to build roads. Even if you're going to have an EV, you need to build roads. So what you're doing is, even though you're encouraging people to have electric cars, perhaps, or solar panels, the fact that you're going to have driving rather than it being in urban centres, you are building with the car in mind. And I think the report, you can read about it, says that actually we should be doing building in brownfield sites, which I agree with. You can take parts of our cities that are really in terrible states and do the levelling up the government talks about by building there without destroying the environment and the greenfield site. So I'd say check that out. And another story that I thought was really quite interesting was about cement. So Engie and Holcim, one of the cement firms, are working on a solution where you could store energy in cement. That's right. Can you believe that? So, a storage technology that's different to batteries, using a sort of cement material that can absorb energy and then release it when you hydrate it. So you may have heard of frozen air. This is kind of frozen cement. It sounds completely bonkers, but these are the sort of things I think are really interesting. And again, it's a story that's well worth checking out. We've got plenty more news on the site. You certainly enjoyed the podcast the other week on cement, so I would encourage people to listen to other episodes. But let's get on to this week's story, which, as I said, it sounds like science fiction to me. But imagine this, you get a train and you go from one city to another. You've done a fairly low carbon journey. And then what you do is you get in a taxi to go to where your final destination is. Well, what if you didn't get in a taxi? What if you got into a small drone type vehicle, a human drone type vehicle, which was battery powered, which took off vertically and took you to your place and landed there? Crazy, foolish, low carbon, might be all of those things. Well, Ricky Sandhu is the CEO of Urban Airport, and he had a very interesting chat with Kieran all about his belief that these urban taxis are, well, and he's not the only one, Stephen Fitzpatrick from Opus kind of thinks this, that these are going to be the way we transport ourselves around in the next sort of 5 to 10 years. So have a listen, and I'll tell you my thoughts at the end.
Hi there, welcome to this week's Net Hero podcast. I'm Kieran Bowes, and I'm delighted to say that today I'm joined with Ricky Sandhu, who is the founder and executive chairman at Urban Airport. How are you doing, Ricky?
Very good, thanks. Hi, Kieran. Great pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the podcast. Well, firstly, I think I just want to ask, what is Urban Airport? I'm sure people will want to know.
So Urban Airport is a company that I founded back in 2019, and it exists to provide the infrastructure solutions to a whole new future net zero mobility system, which is powered by eVTOL, so electric vertical takeoff and landing vehicles. In the same way that cars need roads and trains need railways and planes need airports, this future mobility solution of eVTOL is going to need urban airports. So somewhere to land and take off, somewhere to safely and securely process the vehicles and process the passengers. So our role is to provide that ground infrastructure solution, which for us is a technology-driven solution. So it's a very new and innovative approach to providing infrastructure, but it also includes the air infrastructure as well. So building those roads in the sky that these vehicles will fly along. And at either end, we'll have urban airports of different shapes and sizes to receive you and other kind of travelers, but also to safely and securely manage the vehicles as well.
So it's a fairly long-winded full name, so we will just refer to it as eVTOL. So why are they important when we're talking about sustainable transport? Maybe you could explain the difference really between eVTOLs and a regular plane, because, you know, if I want to go on holiday at the moment, I would take a plane. But if we're talking in the more kind of technological forward-thinking perspective and a sustainable transport way of thinking, where do these fall in, and what is it that makes them different specifically?
Sure. Well, I think straight away, I think these eVTOL, I think the E in the eVTOL is already the most important thing. So these are electric vehicles. So there's zero emission from these vehicles. And I think that's the biggest difference to current aircraft. And I think it's pioneering a whole new trend within aviation with Jet Zero, which is also a big new thing that the government is backing. So immediately, eVTOLs, they are like aircraft, actually. There are kind of various different models. Most of the models are converging on a model that makes sense, which has a combination of not only fixed wing, but also the horizontally aligned propellers. And one that we'll be showcasing in Coventry as part of Air One, which is the world's first fully operational vertiport and urban airport in Coventry, will have the Hyundai vehicle there. And their vehicle is a 16-meter wingspan eVTOL. So, they're not super small, but they're not the size of an aircraft. And the reason why they're important, and I think where they fit in, is really important. So these vehicles, once certified, they can fly at speeds of up to 200 miles per hour, and they have a range of 200, some even further to 250 miles. So what that would mean is you could fly from where I am right now in central London, you could fly to Coventry, to Air One, on one single charge. And I think, these vehicles, there are a number of different types. Most of them are aiming for, somewhere between 4 and 6 people, and ultimately will be fully autonomous. So where the pilot will be seated in them first, that seat will ultimately become available to travelers. But there are some companies who are developing 30-seat eVTOLs, so much bigger capacity, but not significantly bigger in terms of the overall wingspan. And I think, this technology, I think is something which everyone should get their head around, in the sense that, it's not a mass transportation solution. It's a complementary transportation solution. So imagine, if you arrive, we take London and Coventry again, if you take the train from central London to Coventry, which is, a sustainable mass transit solution, public transport, get to Coventry. When you get to Coventry railway station, you still need to get, home or to the office or to your meeting. So what you can do now is transfer from the train to our urban airport, which is, 60 seconds walk away, and very quickly board an air taxi to take you that final mile, even, or the final 5 miles, or take you to Warwick, to take you to the neighboring areas in and around Coventry, as opposed to leaving the train and jumping into a taxi, which runs on the ground, into a car. Now, there are obviously two types of cars around at the moment, one which are hydrocarbon, internal combustion engine. So they add to congestion, but also to pollution. But if you were to get into an electric regular taxi on the ground, that won't add to pollution from the tailpipe, but it will still contribute towards congestion, and it will still contribute to particulates in the atmosphere, which are from brake discs and from rubber tires. And so that's why I think for us to get towards net zero, we need to use more sustainable modes of transport. But it's also about creating, cleaner air, and easing congestion and creating a better quality of and around urban centers. So eVTOL, I think, have a big role to play, helping us provide that extra layer of connectivity and fixing the links that that don't yet exist, in many parts of the country and around the world.
There was a lot said there. So a lot to unpack. But for me, one of the most intriguing points was, I don't think we would ever think of air travel as a short journey solution. We always think of, I want to go on holiday, I want to go to, Malaga. Well, it's going to be 2 hours, or you wouldn't think, some people do, but most people wouldn't even take a flight from Liverpool to London when you can get the train. And I think that's a really interesting point. You're saying you could take one of these eVTOLs to a neighboring town or city. I guess the next step would be the infrastructure, which you guys are working hard on implementing. Surely this would be quite cost heavy, though, do you think? Or is this something that is viable to sort of have outside of Coventry after? Is that the idea with the expansion maybe later?
Exactly. And I think, one of the great benefits of our solution is that it's a low footprint, low capex solution. And what that means is that we have worked very, very hard on our technology. We have multiple patents already filed. And, we've kind of, our team, I think it's important to say, is built you know, from some of the world's leading designers, engineers in aviation, aerospace, have run airports, have run airlines. And so we have a lot of experience, not only in cities, but also in aerospace and aviation. And I think I personally have actually worked on many airports, including Amad International in Doha. And I think what we've been able to do is look at this technology, the eVTOL, understand how these vehicles work, and combine that uniquely with understanding how cities work. And so what that means then is, you know, our solution is not a a traditional approach to aviation planning and infrastructure. Our approach is to have a technology-driven solution. So part of, you know, at the center of an urban airport, you have what I call a three-dimensional runway. So we have a takeoff and landing pad, like a launch pad, which is integral to our urban airport. And in the immediate kind of periphery of that landing pad, you've got charging, maintenance, hangar and stowage, passenger processing, checking, and so on. So you have a very compact solution that can drive actually really high capacity by moving and managing the vehicles really quite quickly. And so what that would mean, first and foremost, is that because it's a low footprint solution that works really hard, you're kind of doing more with less. And you're also able to take up less space in cities. So it's going to be much more acceptable to communities and neighborhoods. You know, so we don't need to take up huge swathes of your city to put in, you know, my God, you're going to put an airport in the middle of your city. It's going to be like how we have, you know, tube stations and train stations and some larger kind of, you know, bus stops. And ultimately we see, because of this kind of ability to integrate into cities, urban airports will kind of become second nature. Our goal is to kind of make them invisible. You know, in cities, you know, we don't notice every single bus stop as we drive past. And I think, you know, bus stops are super important because it provides this constant connectivity, you know, that you can jump in and out of as you require. And most of our cities and towns are very poorly connected. You know, to get from where I live to Euston Station, even though the actual train from Euston to Coventry goes right behind my house, I still have to get, you know, quite a distance just to get to the station to come exactly back where I was. And so, you know, you can't solve those problems with incumbent solutions. And so we foresee a variety of different shapes and sizes of urban airports being integrated very, very subtly across our towns and cities, providing that extra layer of connection. And then it means if you live in a town or village, and HS2 is going to be coming close by, you won't have to drive to the HS2 station because there is no tram or train or any other solution. You can take an air taxi that connects you, and that won't add any more congestion to the road. You won't need a wider road or a bigger road. And so the kind of the benefits from a carbon perspective by mitigating other infrastructure requirements, which are based on traditional solutions, is another massive bonus that utilizing air taxis, if you can build the infrastructure in the high demand locations. So it brings a lot of advantages. And we firmly believe that a low footprint, high capacity, ultra compact solution like ours will be really key to unlocking this.
I mean, there's two points that sort of personally come to my mind when you're talking about this. You know, in terms of it's almost seems to me you're kind of posing like a ride hailing service, but it's in the air. So obviously, as you say, that would cut out traffic and it would make journeys a lot easier. The thing is, obviously, if you want to take a journey somewhere with a taxi on the ground, you would say where you want to go and that taxi would be able to do that. But I'm guessing, you know, there'd probably be a lot more limited number of these air taxis. So would it be the sort of thing like a train where there's a certain destination that it always sort of definitively goes to? Or would there be eventually an aim for flexibility of saying, I don't know, let's pick somewhere random like Warwick. I want to go to Warwick, but today it's going to Oxford. It's like a train. Is that what you're sort of saying there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to start, you know, so we have an app, right? We have the Urban Airport app, which we'll be launching very soon. And that will give travelers and our customers a lot of access just to a whole host of different services. But one of them will be able to book an air taxi. Now, in order to book an air taxi, there's got to be somewhere to fly from, and there's got to be somewhere to fly to.
Yeah, of course.
Right. So that means We need urban airports in those locations, and those locations will start to appear. And you mentioned Warwick. There's a great use case with Warwick, because a lot of people arrive in Coventry from north or from the south or from the Midlands. And then when you get to Coventry, and what the university does is put on coaches. So if you're going to look at Warwick University, you'll probably arrive at Coventry Central Station, and there'll be a coach there that then drives, you know, a whole bunch of people, a bunch of prospective students down to Warwick. So we would then, you would argue then, you know, we would need an urban airport in Warwick. And so what would happen is, as these urban airports start being ordered and we start implementing them, as part of that, we would start to build the air infrastructure that joins the dots quite literally together. And so that would mean that there'd be an air corridor that has been established, you know, that would help establish between Coventry and Warwick University's urban airport. And that becomes an air corridor that we will maintain and sustain in the same way that, you know, transport operators maintain and sustain railway lines, or even the M40 or the M25 and all of our motorways. And so along that air corridor, all of a sudden, once there's sufficient demand, that air corridor can be used to get from Coventry to Warwick. And ultimately, there could be, if it's subject to demand, an on-demand service. So, you know, you wake up and you think, oh, I'm late for a lecture or something. And you log onto the app, and you ultimately will be able to call an air taxi. But to begin with, there will be no doubt, because of the demand, there'll be scheduled flights, you know, every 20 minutes or every 10 minutes. And that schedule will be planned. And that's how it will start, as a scheduled service, until the, you know, public accept, you know, that this is part of their lives and it becomes pretty normal. And then you can roll it out. And of course, then we'll just need to, you know, keep providing to meet the demand as more eVTOLs and more operators come on stream. So it's going to take some time, but it's something that we believe will become quite accessible and really help the UK and other countries increase their productivity. You know, so we're not sitting around in traffic, and not everyone can ride a bike, which is obviously sometimes much quicker in congested cities. You know, so it's going to be one of those things where it will take you half an hour to get there in a car, but it will take, you know, 2 minutes to get there in an air taxi.
I mean, it's a really exciting prospect, the thought of that. The one part that you raised, I think personally, as a general member of the public who would think maybe I would take an air taxi, the autonomous side of it. Now, you know, when you take a regular flight from a normal aeroplane, there's obviously air traffic control, there's people telling the pilots which way it is safe to go. And you know, I don't know the ins and outs of it, obviously, but the basics in terms of this route is fairly free on the airway, and this is the route you'll be taking to get to your destination. With autonomous eVTOLs then, so people would board, would there be a way of sort of tracking then with like the direct way that it would have to go to reach the destination? And I'm guessing these would they never have pilots? Is that not really something that would that not make it really a cost-effective venture?
Most of the kind of leading eVTOL manufacturers are starting with a piloted service, which means there's one seat less that they can sell, so there'll be a pilot on board, you know, flying, you know, this eVTOL. And their location, first of all, when they take off from an urban airport, we know that they're there. We know they're taken off. We've given them the clearance to take off. They're within our air traffic zone, in the same way exactly as, you know, Heathrow or any airport, you know, in any country. Each airport has its own ATZ, its air traffic zone. So we know that they're going to take off. We've given the clearance for them to take off. And we know the flight plan, because that's something that we have either built or that we're working on with our partners, and then we can track that eVTOL via our unmanned traffic management system. So we always know where that VTOL is along that corridor, and then when it reaches the destination, it's then kind of received within the, if you take, you know, Warwick as destination in the urban airports, ATZ in Warwick. Now, ultimately, the goal is with these vehicles to have them autonomous. And the reason for that really is to make the business case for the OEMs for that work. If you can have one more seat where a customer is paying, as opposed to having that seat taken up by the pilot, that makes a big difference. And we are working with an American OEM, a company called Whisk, who are actually looking at not having a piloted eVTOL, but going straight to a fully autonomous. And so they're quite unique in that sense. So they're going literally all the way straight to autonomous, which is really exciting. And obviously it comes with more complications, but that's why, you know, the OEM and the air service provider and us as an airport, you know, we've got a lot of work that we work together on with, you know, with civil aviation and so on, to make sure that we can test those autonomous systems both within the urban airport and on the vehicle, so that we can deliver safe passage, you know, for those customers in those vehicles. And the entire industry will head towards that. It will take a bit of time. So it is really exciting that Wisk are actually already on that trajectory.
I guess that would avoid the situation in Back to the Future, where all the flying cars are stuck in a traffic jam in the air. Wouldn't want to.
Yeah, but
to
you know, but also more kind of just basic problems, like, you know, I mean, we've just experienced this, you know, this massive issue with no lorry drivers, right, to drive our lorries around, and that supply chain issue. I remember Qatar Airways, you know, they were, maybe they still are, but certainly when I was working on the airport with them, they were the fastest growing airline in the world, right? And they were, you know, they were struggling to find pilots. And so they had to go abroad and quite aggressively find pilots from other countries and put them on, you know, pretty serious training programs. So I think that pilots, it will become a big bottleneck for this industry. And, you know, if we're talking about, you know, hundreds and thousands of these types of air taxis all over the world, having that autonomous function is going to be absolutely key to maintaining a regular service, doing it cost effectively. So it's, you know, it's profitable for the air services providers.
No, of course. No, it makes total sense. It's just it's exciting. But at the same time, it almost doesn't feel real when you think that these things that have kind of always been deemed unrealistic, and now, you know, companies like yourselves are making kind of the trail for this to actually happen. I mean, I know technically, obviously, it's not a car, but in a way, it's almost like a flying car, and people, you know, will be sort of amazed to see these air taxis.
No, you're right. And I'm speaking to you on Future Net Zero. And since the Industrial Revolution, we've been carbonizing the world, right?
Yeah.
Over the last 100 years, we've got to this tipping point. And now the targets are, you know, we need to decarbonize the world, but we need to do it in like a third of the time that we carbonized. So if you imagine all of that innovation, all of that industrial revolution around the world, and it took us 100 years to get to kind of where we are now with cars and infrastructure and so on. And so now we're like, oh my God, we need to get back down to zero, right? We're at this massive kind of, you know, peak. And we've got to get down to zero, and we don't have 100 years to do it. You know, we've got to do it by 2050, which is 30 years. And so, you know, that's
the deindustrial revolution in 30 years.
Well, yeah, but it's like, you know, it's the next generation, and we need innovative solutions. And without them, we're simply not gonna get. But of course, you know, to deliver them, we have to work, you know, double time, because we have to take everybody with us, which is why we have a great marketing team and PR team, because it's very important that we share, you know, what we're doing, you know, with folks like yourselves. So, you know, it becomes more normal. You know, one of my first announcements earlier last year, we had 5 billion people tune in, hear about and listen to what we were doing. And people were just like, wow. But the questions were like, this is a Jetsons, oh my God. And now over the course of the last year, you know, there's been a lot more coverage, a lot of activity in the sector on eVTOLs. And it's becoming kind of talked about. We were in the Daily Express just the other day. So it's kind of, you know, that's kind of what we need. We need
familiarity, of course. Yeah.
Familiarity to it. And M1 in Coventry, which opens on the 25th of April, is going to be the first time people can get up close, kick the tires, see these vehicles, understand the process, you know, have a coffee at the Urban Air Cafe, do some shopping on the Urban Airport app, and actually, you know, familiarize themselves with the fact that actually it's not so weird. You know, this is actually quite familiar, you know, in terms of process. And I think so those kinds of demonstrations are absolutely key. And we all need to kind of, you know, buy into it, because, you know, we all collectively have got to get back down to zero in less than, you know, 30 years.
Of course. I mean, it's a task. It's something that we know well about covering, but it's great to see what you guys are sort of channeling there, and who knows what this might hold. We have a an event in June in Coventry. So maybe you'll come and see how things are going. Before we end today, I just wanted to ask, actually, because I've seen that there's three sites. There's Marine One, Air One, and Terra One. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we have a variety of models. Because of our solution, we're able to have urban airports at grade. We're able to have them on rooftops, which are much, much harder to integrate landing pads on because of existing building structures and energy and carbon and accessibility and so on. But if you have a lightweight modular solution, we can certainly have urban airports on rooftops. And then Marine One is an offshore floating solution as well, which is really exciting because, an offshore solution, adds to tourism, it adds for resilience in terms of safety, but also even border security. So there's a whole host of different customers around the world who are very interested in Marine One. But we also have another version of urban airport, which is called the City Box, which is it's a miniaturized version of Air One, which is only for cargo logistics. So imagine a bit like a Rubik's Cube that has multiple landing pads on the top that serves smaller cargo drones. So our technology, what's nice about that is that we've scaled it down, actually, but we can also scale it up to, so when the industry gets going and we're all used to getting air taxis, we'll need much bigger urban airports in certain locations. And so we can also scale it up as well.
Well, thanks so much for coming on today, Ricky. I mean, it's been really interesting, and hopefully I'll see you in an air taxi at some point in the future. If people want to find out more about Urban Airport, what you guys are doing, and obviously it was April, you said that the site will sort of provisionally open in Coventry, where can they find out more?
Yeah, so visit www.urbanairport.com and then all the details will be there.
Perfect. Thanks so much. And thanks to everyone for tuning in to this week's Net Hero podcast. And we'll be back next week at the same time. Thank you.
Ricky Sander there speaking to Kieran. I think, I'll be honest with you, let's put it this way. It does sound like you've suddenly become a little package delivered by a certain company called Starting With An A. But I mean, hey, maybe that's the way it'll be. Maybe you will just get into a little kind of pod and you'll be lifted up and landed in about 5 years' time when you go to a meeting. I'm not sure. I think that it's like all these things. People thought the iPad was crazy when Steve Jobs brought it out. Who needs that? Maybe we will be in little kind of vertical takeoff pods, little drones that are taking us from here to there. He certainly believes in it. A lot of people think it could be a thing. I think it's much more likely that it might be a way of transporting goods. And also, I'm not too sure I'd like to get in one if it doesn't have a pilot. So maybe I'm just a bit too old on that. Listen, thanks for listening. Please subscribe to the podcast. As I said, you can come along to the Big Zero Show June the 21st. Make sure you register at bigzeroshow.com. Please subscribe and I'll catch you next week.